This evening we're looking at the troubled, people who have mental health problems. So I want to start this evening where I actually left off when I did the introduction to this series, probably about 5-6 weeks ago, where I asked a series of questions, which is about how we see people. Do we see everyone as loved by God, made in God's image, valuable enough for Jesus to die for them, and do I treat them as Jesus would? And that led on to two other questions. Do we question the wrong attitudes of others? And do we take action when others are treated unjustly? And that was for all the groups that we're talking about, but of course appropriate for tonight's group as well, people who are suffering with mental health problems. And I gave a quote from John Stuart Mill, which is very well known because it's been requoted many times. Bad men need nothing more to compass their needs than that good men should look on and do nothing. And of course, that applies to good women as well, looking on and doing nothing. What would Jesus do if he were in our place in this day and in this age? So, question for you. Here's a list. Does anybody know what that's a list of? Stunned silence. That's a list of Baptist churches. Do you know what those Baptist churches might have in common? That's one. Anything else?
Water.
Water, yeah. Could be something, if you think about it, with the subject. Something to do with mental health?
Mental health.
It's not a mental health nurse. But good try. I'll come back later and tell you what these churches have got in common. I thought it might be a good place to start this evening with some definitions. So I found this from the mentalhealth.org.uk website, which has got some definition about mental health that I thought might be a good place to start. And it says this. Most mental health symptoms have traditionally been divided into groups called either neurotic or psychotic symptoms. Neurotic covers those symptoms which can be regarded as severe forms of normal, in inverted commas, emotional experiences such as depression, anxiety or panic. Conditions formerly referred to as neuroses are now more frequently called common mental health problems. Less common are psychotic symptoms, which interfere with a person's perception of reality and may include hallucinations such as seeing, hearing, smelling, or feeling things that no one else can. In summary, mental health problems affect the way that people think, feel, and behave. But of course, those two definitions raise a couple of questions. Firstly, what is normal, in inverted commas? And the second one is, what is reality? So I thought, well, what is normal? Well, the first place I went to, of course, was this. So people in the room here probably divide into two halves. So there are people who recognize this and know what this is, and the people who don't. Now, if you're in the category who don't, it's your lucky night. Because I think I saw Mrs. Haslam in, so she can be doing she will do a class afterwards for anyone who doesn't know what this is. She'll explain it all to you. But what is normal? And what is normal when it comes to behavior? The way we feel. What is normal? Especially when our feelings come from our brain. And everyone has a unique brainwave pattern, a unique neural network pattern, and unique brain chemistry. So what could be said to be normal for a brain? And who defines anyway, when it comes to how we should feel and how we should behave, what is normal? Who is it who defines normal? And I thought, you know, could I think of an example, not quite in this area, that might point this out? And in a minute, I'm going to talk about, mention different types of mental health problems. And one of them that's listed is low self-esteem. And sometimes that's related to body image and how we see ourselves. So in terms of who defines what's normal, I came across this. For ladies, the average UK dress size is 16. But in a fashion magazine, plus size equals size 12 or above. So what is normal? And who defines what normal is? When it comes to the question of reality, it gets even more fun. Where do you go to get a definition these days? Well, of course, there's only one place to go, isn't there? Wikipedia. And Wikipedia says this: reality is the sum or aggregate of all that is real or existent, as opposed to that which is only imaginary. Now, that's simple enough, isn't it? That makes sense. And then it goes on. In physical terms, reality is the total of the universe known and unknown. So if something's unknown, how can you know that it's therefore real as opposed to imaginary? Just think about that one for a minute before we get on to the more difficult stuff. As it goes on, and this is a very, very long definition, if you want to go and read it, it's really quite interesting. It goes on about these things. These include questions about whether only physical objects are real, that is, physicalism, whether reality is fundamental immaterial, for example, idealism, whether hypothetical, unobservable entities posited by scientific theories exist, whether God exists, whether numbers and other abstract objects exist, and whether possible worlds exist. It's getting a lot more difficult now, isn't it, to define what reality is. Now, what Wikipedia doesn't mention, of course, in its definition, is anything from the Bible, which then tends to complicate it a bit more. This is what Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Paul brings in the fourth dimension, time. What might be real now, we think, might not be real later on. So if you go back to the first definition from Wikipedia, about reality, the sum or aggregate of all that is real or existent. If you look out into the night sky at stars that are distant, we of course don't see them as they are now because of the distance from us. We see them as they once were. So what we're looking at may not currently exist. Therefore, are they real? I leave you to think about these things. This is what the Apostle John wrote in the book of Revelation. On the Lord's day I was in the Spirit, and I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet, which said, "Write on a scroll what you see, and send it to the seven churches, to Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea." And of course, John goes on in the whole of the book of Revelation about what the message was he was given from God, and what he saw of heaven. Is that reality? Is that imaginary? What is real? What is normal? I said I'd mention some mental health problems. This is from Mind, who put a list on their website, which is quite a long one. And some of these you might think are surprising. It puts in here eating problems. It puts in here loneliness. Self-esteem is in here. Sleep problems is in here as well, as well as lots of other ones that you might expect to find in. Mental health problems are many, and they affect many people. 16 million people in the UK experience a mental illness. One in four adults will experience a mental illness at some point each year in the UK. This is really interesting. Three in four mental illnesses start in childhood, with 50% of problems in adult life, excluding dementia, take root before the age of 15. 10% of school children have a diagnosable mental illness. 75% of young people with a mental health problem are not receiving treatment. The average wait for effective treatment for young people is 10 years. And suicide is the biggest killer of, that says young people, but I think it's more accurate to say young adults, because it's talking about people in the age 20 to 34. Knife crime gets big press in this country, but suicide doesn't. It impacts on life expectancy, and more than half of young people link mental illness with alienation and isolation. Mental illness is widespread and affects many people. But just 6% of UK health research spending goes on mental health, much less than on cancer and on dementia. And of that that is spent, only 30% is focused on young people, which of course is where most people get affected in the first place. Mental health is a big issue in the world and in this country. How do we respond to it in church? Well, there's a website called Mind and Soul Foundation. Some of you may have come across it, a Christian organisation, which is a really helpful and useful site on this subject. And this is one of the things they say. However, whilst things in churches are becoming so much better, classical stigma is giving way to an informed hybrid. This is a narrative that has moved on from calling mental health issues simply sin, disobedience or demonic attack, but still leave mental health sufferers feeling wounded. And they say, we thought it might be helpful to highlight some examples so that we can make our conversations even more grace-filled. And here's just one of the examples that they give, saying this is what people say to those who've got a mental health problem. You've already been healed of your mental health problem. Now you just need to agree with the healing that you have received. And what the person hears is, your disobedience is keeping you ill. And the Mind and Soul Foundation thinks, sometimes we need to choose the behaviours that we have decided for in our minds. However, this is not the same as choosing a healing. Mental health recovery is not about disobedience, but it is sometimes about courage. No one with the flu is disobedient by feeling unwell. Equally, no one with depression is disobedient by feeling low. Let's not confuse healing steps with the healing itself. And I've put on there the on the slides, which will go on the website, the page reference for the whole of that article, which you might be interested to read. How do Christians respond to those who have mental health problems? And as it mentions there, there are some Christians who perhaps feel that Christians shouldn't have mental health problems at all. But our passage for tonight is Psalm 42. And here are some of the verses from Psalm 42. The psalmist writes, "My tears have been my food day and night, while people say to me all day long, 'Where is your God?' Why, my soul, are you downcast? Why so disturbed within me? Why, my soul, are you downcast? Why, my soul, are you downcast? Why so disturbed within me?" The psalmist is crying day and night. He is downcast and disturbed. This sounds like a description of someone who's having mental health problems. One of the other things that's mentioned in the Mind and Soul Foundation website is that there are Christians from some backgrounds who think that mental health problems are all to do with demons. What I'd say on that is we need to be really careful about this one. Here are some verses from John's Gospel. "You are demon-possessed," the crowd answered, speaking to Jesus. "Who is trying to kill you?" The Jews answered him, "Aren't we right in saying that you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed?" At this they exclaimed, "Now we know that you are demon-possessed." "He is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him?" And from the point of view of many of those people who were saying these things in the crowd, this statement might have appeared quite rational. If you think about what Jesus said, Jesus claimed to be equal with God. He claimed to be God. He claimed to be able to forgive sins. These are all claims that, if we go back to the definition of psychosis, he might have been defined as someone with psychiatric problems. We need to be careful before we decide that someone, or think that someone, is under the influence of demons. So what about people who have mental health problems? This is what else it says in Psalm 42. "As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, my God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When can I go and meet with God?" "Deep calls to deep in the roar of your waterfalls. All your waves and breakers have swept over me." We cry out to God, and God by his Spirit also cries out to us. We're made body, mind, and spirit. And it's possible for our spirit to connect with God's Spirit, regardless of our mental state. Paul writes this in 1 Corinthians 1. "But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him." No one is beyond the call of Jesus through his Holy Spirit. All that Jesus requires is a response in childlike faith. Just because someone might not seem to have the capability to understand the gospel doesn't mean that they are beyond the reach of Jesus and beyond the reach of the Holy Spirit. I ask these questions at the start. Do we see everyone as loved by God, made in God's image, valuable enough for Jesus to die for them? Do I treat them as Jesus would? Do we question the wrong attitudes of others? And do we take action when others are unjustly treated? People who are suffering from mental health problems need our help and support. I began with a quote that's well known. Here's another quote that's equally well known. This is from Martin Niemöller. First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. Martin Niemöller was a German pastor at the time of the Second World War. That's what he said after the Second World War, as he came to understand what part he had played in the atrocities that had been carried out by the Nazis. He spoke many times on this subject, and this wasn't the only set of words that he used. He described many other groups who'd been affected, who'd been taken in the same way as these people. And here are just some of the others that he refers to. Disabled people, whom they, that's the Nazis, called the sick, so-called incurables, and those who the Nazis said were lives unworthy of life. These were people with physical and mental health disabilities. They came for them too, and no one stood up for them. So what about these churches? What do they have in common? Well, just before I tell you that, I just want to leave you with one question. What is God saying to you about mental health this evening? Is it perhaps that you have a mental health problem that you need help with? And God says, well, that's okay to have those problems and to get help. Or is God saying, maybe you should think about what you could do to help someone you might know, or people in general who've got mental health problems? What is God saying to each one of us about this group of people and what he wants us to do? Now, I'm not going to tell you what these people actually have in common. I'm leaving that with a video who'll tell it far better than I will.
I think we all know that there are massive issues in our nation with mental and emotional ill health, with loneliness and with isolation. One little church in Nottingham 4 years ago decided to do something about this, and Renew 37 was born. Here in a quiet shared space where it's okay not to be okay, we are being prayerful, being present and being in partnership. Being present is the absolute key, showing up. But the activities that we do in our Renew spaces are co-produced. Anyone can suggest a hobby or share a hobby, something that they might be doing at home that is good for their well-being. The five ways to well-being: connecting, learning, getting active, taking notice and giving are key. All are welcome. Being in partnership means that the church can stick to simple habits. We partner with mental health teams from our local councils, from the NHS, or from a local charity. Anything that helps us to stay simple in our habits and to signpost on when people need more help. We're not just our mental health label. We're all these amazing people with amazing gifts. In our Renew spaces, we can find out what those are and share them. Being prayerful is absolutely key. Putting our prayer spaces right up next to our social action spaces means that when people have had enough of being together, they can sidle off and have some time on their own. And the still presence of God is in every space. The still presence of God that I found when I wasn't well was the only thing that brought me back to health. Habits like meditating on the Psalms, using the Lord's Prayer, reviewing our day quietly with God, these we do together in simple ways so anyone can join in. Could you imagine a space like this on every street? Could you imagine a web of well-being across our nation where everyone is known by name and not by label? Wouldn't that be wonderful? To see well-being restored, a wave of well-being rather than a tsunami of mental ill health.